VOA1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, U.S. President Donald Trump was hospitalized for 3 days earlier this month after experiencing symptoms of COVID-19. He received several treatments for the disease. One was an experimental antibody drug from the American biotechnology company, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. On Sunday, Trump told Fox News, "The antibody kind of thing that I took, I felt really good almost after taking it. I know people call it a therapeutic, but to me, it's a cure, okay? To me, it's a cure." The president added that he wanted the treatment offered to coronavirus patients immediately. But not so fast. Leonard Schleifer is head of Regeneron. He told CBS News, "The president's case is a case of one, and that's what we call a case report. And it is evidence of what's happening, but it's kind of the weakest evidence that you can get." Trump is among fewer than 10 people who received the antibody drug under compassionate use rules. He was not taking part in a study on the drug's safety and effectiveness. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration permits use of experimental treatments in seriously ill patients when no other treatments are available. Even if it is not a cure, like Trump said, Regeneron and drug maker Eli Lilly are now asking the FDA to permit emergency use of their antibody drugs in patients with COVID-19. Antibodies are proteins the body makes when an infection occurs. They connect to a virus and help kill the harmful bacteria. Vaccines make the body think it has an infection and, in turn, produce antibodies to fight it. But it can take several weeks after a vaccine or natural infection for the body to make the most effective antibodies. The experimental drugs from Regeneron and Eli Lilly are very strong antibodies. They were created in laboratories and are currently being tested. The treatments, in theory, start helping COVID-19 patients right away. Regeneron's REGN-COV2 treatment combines a genetically engineered antibody and a second antibody, one from recovered COVID-19 patients. The company used this process to manufacture a successful antibody treatment for Ebola virus disease. This method has also been used to develop drugs to treat other viruses, such as HIV, the cause of AIDS. Eli Lilly is testing two antibody treatments. One involves a single antibody called LY-CoV-555. The second treatment combines that antibody with an antibody called LY-CoV-16. It is meant for higher-risk patients. Lilly said early results of a study showed the treatment reduced hospital emergency room visits for persons with mild or moderate forms of COVID-19. It said the treatment also reduced symptoms of the disease, the amount of the virus, and length of hospital stays for such patients. Lilly and Regeneron have only reported partial results of their studies. Information from the trials has yet to be published or seen by independent scientists. On October 13th, Lilly announced that it temporarily stopped the combination treatment trials for safety reasons. Its treatment is similar to the combined antibody treatment from Regeneron. During public health emergencies, the FDA can approve drugs to treat COVID-19 patients based on a lower standard of evidence that is normally required. Both Eli Lilly and Regeneron asked the FDA last week for emergency authorization. On March 20th, the FDA approved the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine for emergency use in patients with COVID-19. By June 15th, the agency withdrew the emergency use authorization and warned against its use. At this time, only remdesivir, a medicine developed by Gilead Sciences, has been approved for the treatment of hospitalized patients with COVID-19. Remdesivir appeared to help patients with moderate signs of COVID-19 recover faster after a 5-day treatment when compared to those receiving other treatments.
Apple has announced its first smartphones built to work with 5G, the world's fastest ever wireless technology. While the new phones may have been long awaited by Apple fans, many users will not experience the reality of 5G anytime soon. This is because 5G networks are still being built in many parts of the world, including wide areas of the United States. At a virtual release event on Tuesday, the company announced 4 versions of its latest device, the iPhone 12. The base model has the same display size as the iPhone 11. 15.5 centimeters. But the new iPhone 12 is lighter and thinner. It sells for $800. A much smaller version called iPhone 12 Mini has a 13.7 centimeter display. It is priced at $700. The company describes the Mini as the world's smallest, thinnest, lightest 5G phone. The other two devices, the iPhone 12 Pro and iPhone 12 Pro Max, are aimed at users seeking Apple's highest-end smartphones. The iPhone 12 Pro Max is the largest of the new devices, with a 17-centimeter display. The Pro version comes with a 15.5-centimeter display. The iPhone 12 Pro sells for $1,000, while the Pro Max costs an additional $100. Apple says the Pro and Pro Max versions offer a more powerful 3-camera system and improved photo processing tools to produce higher quality pictures and video. The two devices also come equipped with a new 3-dimensional or 3D LiDAR sensor system. LiDAR is a technology that uses light lasers to scan areas and measure distances. Apple said users will be able to use the tool to create depth maps of whatever space they are in. LiDAR can also improve camera operations in low-light situations and at night. Pre-orders will begin October 16th for the iPhone 12 and iPhone 12 Pro in the United States, Britain, China, and some other countries. The iPhone Mini and Pro Max will be available for pre-order on November 6th and will arrive in stores November 13th. The company said all its iPhone 12 models in the United States will support millimeter wave 5G, the fastest version of the technology, as well as mid- and low-band signals. Some competing Android devices support only the lower-band versions of 5G. Apple brought in the head of U.S. wireless carrier Verizon, Hans Vestberg, to explain the strength of 5G on its network. 5G promises much faster speeds for things like downloading movies and gaming on mobile devices. 5G is also expected to prevent internet slowdowns in high-use areas. But connecting at such speeds currently can be rare. While major telecom operators have launched 5G networks, major speed improvements are still uncommon in much of the world. Some parts of Asia, notably China and South Korea, have established 5G networks that offer users major speed improvements. Bob O'Donnell is head of Technalysis Research, a technology market research company. He told the Reuters news agency he thinks Apple may be setting users up for disappointment by drawing too much attention to the benefits of 5G. Many users receiving their new 5G iPhones will only be able to experience small speed increases until wireless carriers fully build out their network systems, O'Donnell said. I don't feel like Apple clarified that as much as they could have. Still, many industry experts expect the new 5G devices to sell well, since Apple has one of the world's most loyal and wealthy user bases. The iPhone remains at the center of Apple's business. Competitors making Android devices, such as South Korea's Samsung and China's Huawei, began launching their 5G smartphones more than a year ago. During its launch event, Apple also announced it was shrinking the size and price of its HomePod smart speaker. The new HomePod Mini, which is based on Apple's Siri Assistant technology, will cost $100 and start shipping on November 16th. The smart speaker launch is seen as a move by Apple to catch up to Amazon and Google in the market for internet-connected home devices. Apple still holds only a small share of the market. Experts say a big reason for Apple's low sales of its smart speaker is that its main HomePod device costs $300, while competing products from Amazon and Google cost as little as $50. I'm Brian Lynn.
Are you at risk of getting seriously ill from the new coronavirus? Here are some things to keep in mind. 80% of coronavirus cases are mild. Young and healthy people are at low risk. Other people and those with serious health conditions have a greater risk of serious illness or even death. If you have a cough, fever, and difficulty breathing, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the World Health Organization website at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English. Welcome to the Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember in Washington. We have been talking about the Compromise of 1850. In September of that year, the United States Congress passed five bills that sought to settle the issue of slavery. All five became law after the president signed them.
Yes, I love everybody. No evil have I done.
Owning another human being was legal in many parts of the U.S. at that time. Most American slaves or their ancestors originally came from Africa. Many slaves worked for white landowners in cotton or tobacco fields. Some, like Phoebe Boyd of Virginia, worked in the family's home.
Had to clean up and set the table, put in the eating.
That recording comes from the Voices from the Days of Slavery project at the U.S. Library of Congress. Ms. Boyd was speaking in 1935, remembering her childhood as a slave. She said she had to clean up, set the table, carry the food, and afterwards prepare the bed. Harriet Smith of Texas was another former slave. She said in a 1941 recording that she did not go to school.
They don't know nothing about reading and writing. All that I know, the teachers of mine, your master and your missus.
Aunt Harriet, as she was called, said she did not know anything about reading or writing. She said she was taught only to obey the slave owners. Slaves were considered property, like farm animals or furniture. Slave owners could do anything they wanted with their slaves, including separate them from their families, sexually abuse them, hurt, or even kill them. Harriet Smith said her owners treated her well, but she heard about slaves who were mistreated.
Yes, I know times of mistreated people that did, and I hear our folks talking about them hooping, so they had to grease the back to take the clothes from the back.
Some slaves were beaten so badly, she said, they had to repair the holes in their backs with grease. By 1804, all northern states had banned slavery. But northern whites still did not accept blacks as their equals. And slavery was still legal in southern states for more than half of the 19th century. Slave owners there said they needed slaves to work on large farms or for other economic reasons. But other Americans said slavery was immoral, or that it gave the South the unfair competitive edge of low-cost labor. The Compromise of 1850 attempted to balance the desires of those who supported and those who opposed slavery. Politicians were not the only ones who struggled with the issue of slavery in the United States. Slaves, for example, had been fighting the system for some time. Many slaves resisted their owners in small ways. They broke or hid tools, or they worked slowly or claimed to be sick even when they were not. A few answered the violence of slavery with violence. They planned, but rarely succeeded, to kill their masters and escape. A man named Nat Turner led one of the best-known slave rebellions. Turner was born in 1800 in the slave state of Virginia. Unlike most slaves, he could read. He also believed that God had given him a special purpose. In 1831, Turner saw what he described as a sign from above. The sign told him it was time to rebel against slavery. He gathered several men and, in the middle of the night, killed his master and his master's family in their beds. Turner and his men continued to another house and then another. They killed every white person they found. Other slaves saw what was happening and joined Turner. By the end of the raids, 40 blacks had stabbed, beaten, or shot to death an estimated 55 whites. A local white militia moved to stop Turner and his group. Almost all the attackers were captured quickly. Some were killed, others were sold and sent away from their families. But Nat Turner escaped capture. For a month, he hid around his master's farm. Finally, someone found him. Turner was jailed, tried, sentenced, and hanged. After he died, his killers pulled off his skin and removed his head. The historian Henry Louis Gates, Jr., studied Nat Turner's slave rebellion. He wrote that blacks remembered Turner for his personal war against slavery, his violent methods, and his harsh treatment after death. But whites had a different reaction. Frightened white mobs killed another 200 blacks to answer the rebellion. Most of these blacks had no part in the rebellion. After Nat Turner's rebellion, the state of Virginia passed stronger laws to control slaves. The legislation included bans on reading, gathering, and traveling. Even with stronger laws in place, many slaves continued taking huge risks in an effort to win their freedom. From about the end of the 1700s to the middle of the 1800s, thousands escaped slavery on what came to be called the Underground Railroad.
When the sun comes back and the first quail calls.
The Underground Railroad was not a real railroad. It was a group of people, both blacks and whites, who secretly helped slaves escape to the North.
Follow the drink and go.
Members of the Underground Railroad helped slaves leave the places where they lived and worked. These conductors took the escaping slaves to a safe house or business called a station. Station masters hid the escaped slave. Then, at night, a different conductor took him or her to another hiding place farther north. The process was repeated every day and night until the escaped slave was safe in a free state, or even in Canada. A black woman named Harriet Tubman was perhaps the most famous conductor on the Underground Railroad. She had been born a slave around 1820. She worked first in a house and then in the fields for an owner in the slave state of Maryland. Harriet Tubman was known for her bravery. One story people told about her happened when she was a teenage girl. An overseer, someone who controlled the slaves in the field, became angry with another slave. He threatened the man with a heavy weight. Young Harriet stepped between the overseer and the other slave. The overseer threw the weight. It hit her in the head. For the rest of her life, Harriet Tubman suffered from the injury. It caused headaches, strange dreams, and, from time to time, made her fall deeply asleep. When Tubman was about 29, she suspected her owner would sell her, so she decided to escape instead. One night, she secretly walked away. She walked over 200 kilometers following the North Star. Eventually, she arrived in the city of Philadelphia in the free state of Pennsylvania. A year later, Tubman returned to Maryland. She helped her sister and her sister's children escape. Then she helped her brother and two other men. She helped her parents, who were over 70 years old, and she helped many others. In all, Tubman made as many as 19 trips to the South. She led about 300 slaves to freedom. Tubman and her passengers were never caught, but if they had been, they would have been severely punished. Former masters were likely to beat or cut off the hands of escaped slaves. The Compromise of 1850 made escaping slavery even harder. One of the bills Congress passed was the Fugitive Slave Act. It said anyone who helped a fugitive, that is, an escaped slave, would be fined. And it said fugitive slaves must be returned to their owner, even if they had escaped to a free state. Fugitive slaves had no right to a trial. Because they could not defend themselves in court, even freed blacks could be kidnapped and enslaved. In 1852, a white woman published a book about slavery. She called it Uncle Tom's Cabin. Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote the book for one reason. She wanted to show how cruel slavery was. Fugitive slaves also published books about their experiences. The stories painted a picture of slavery that most people in the North had never seen. They were shocked. Public pressure to end slavery grew stronger. Anti-slavery activists, called abolitionists, wanted to free all slaves immediately. But even if that could be done, there was the question of what to do with the freed slaves. In many places, it seemed impossible that blacks and whites could live together peacefully and in freedom. The best answer, some people thought, was to free the slaves and help them return to Africa. It was not a new idea. In the early 1800s, a group of leading Americans had formed an organization for that purpose. They called it the American Colonization Society. In 1820, the society began helping to send blacks to Africa.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.